few geniuses he'd ever met. He talked about people that other folks had denigrated, and he talked about them in high esteem. And so I think, along with the folklorists, some of these business folks...
My name is Michaela Jordan Murray from Catskill, New York, and you're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM.
Find out where the music takes you on the next Deep Threes when we hear from electronic music producer Hodge and pianist Alessandro Giacchero's Chamber Jazz Ensemble, along with work from film composers Lisa Gerard and Joel Christian Goffin. Deep Threes, music beyond boundaries for a digital world.
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXE is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Marjorie and Michael Wild of Rockville, Maryland. WGXE's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXE as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here.
Amelia Teasdale is reporting for the Columbia paper. The Ichabod Crane School Board was updated during a recent public meeting on the estimated cost of the major capital improvement project scheduled for 2020. Larry Toon from Turner Construction said the costs are estimated to be around $24 million, roughly 1% over budget. The project, which includes major upgrades at the high school and middle school buildings, is still in the design phase. The designs will be sent to the State Education Department for review in early December, and bids for construction will be issued in April. Melissa Rinkowitz, a representative from CS Arch, the project designers, said the state review should take around 10 weeks. In December 2018, district residents approved spending a total of $27 million, which encompasses the cost of design, construction, and incidentals. The plan includes work on the art, math, science, and technology wings of the high school, as well as upgrades to the guidance offices and the addition of a technology wing. Renovation of the middle school building includes the addition of more than 700 bleacher seats to the gym, as well as the image of the ghost of Ichabod Crane riding along the side of the roof. And you can read the full story in the Columbia paper.
Amanda Purcell reports for Columbia Green Media that after ballot challenges and absentee vote counting, Democrats won two seats on the Ghent Town Board, and a Democrat and Independence Party candidate won seats in Claverick. In Ghent, there were more than 100 absentee and affidavit ballots challenged November 22nd by the parties, but never brought to court. Democrat incumbent Patty Metheny won with 1,032 votes. And Democrat Kothi Zan won her first term on the Ghent Town Council with 1,005 votes. Republicans Craig Simmons and Peter Nelson Sr. finished out of the running with 995 and 973 votes, respectively. In Claverick, Democrat Katie Cashin won re-election, with George Dunce of the Independence Party also winning a seat. They beat Republican Lisa Bow and Democrat Ian Solomon, though vote totals were not released. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Joseph Spector is reporting for Gannett, New York, on the series of adjustments to the state's STAR program, the annual $3 billion program that gives homeowners a break on school taxes, and how the program could still be vulnerable to change during the upcoming state budget cycle. Lawmakers in the Hudson Valley are arguing the changes need to stop because the annual tinkering with the program is confusing for homeowners and creating a headache for local tax assessors, who increasingly have less power over the program. Westchester Democrat Assemblywoman Sandra Galev said the state cannot continue to negotiate away, and I quote, this vital tax benefit year after year in the budget, end quote. Any additional reforms to the STAR program would have to be made in the state budget for the fiscal year that begins April 1st. Lawmakers return to Albany in January. The state is looking at a $6 billion budget gap, so Governor Andrew Cuomo and legislative leaders may again look to find ways to adjust STAR benefits. Lawmakers said STAR changes have taken place every year over the past five budget cycles. And you can read the full story in the Times-Telegram of Utica.
Nick Reisman reports at New York State of Politics that 93% of early voters in New York this fall said they would vote early again in a poll released on November 26 by the League of Women Voters. Complaints from voters included wanting better polling locations near public transit and better training on new equipment and technology for poll workers. The poll surveyed 1,791 voters in 54 counties and at 239 polling sites. In the first year of early voting in New York, 1.9% of voters cast ballots before Election Day. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics.
The Greene County Police Officers Association released a statement November 28th stating its opposition to criminal justice reform in New York, specifically the procedural changes set to go into effect January 1st. The association is, and I quote, an organization made up of law enforcement officers, active and retired, who either worked or reside in Greene County, end quote. According to the statement, the organization rarely issues press releases, but noted that, and I quote, in light of the truly dramatic changes, we feel it extremely important to inform the residents of Greene County as to our position, end quote. The group identifies the elimination of cash bail and the, and I quote, imposition of strict discovery mandates on police and prosecutors, end quote, as problematic, calling the reforms, and I quote, a clear and frightening attack on our entire criminal justice system, end quote. According to the association, and I quote, the new justice reform procedures are so radical it is nearly impossible to meet the necessary requirements, especially for our small rural district attorney's offices, justice courts, and police agencies. Upstate communities will especially be impacted by these changes due to a lack of resources, end quote. The group is calling on the governor and the state legislature to reconsider the changes. Read the full press release at 985thecat.iheart.com.
Rebecca Carballo reports for the Times Union that U.S. District Judge David Hurd on November 26th dismissed a lawsuit filed by immigration advocates against Rensselaer County and several Republican officials there. Rensselaer County Republican leaders this summer announced plans to give immigration and customs enforcement officials information about those who attempt to obtain driver's licenses under the state's new Green Light Act. That provoked a lawsuit from the New York Immigration Coalition, Common Cause New York, Community Voices Heard Incorporated, and Citizen Action of New York. Their lawsuit was based on an individual plaintiff, Jennifer Benn. She alleges that the press release announcing the efforts to undermine the new law discouraged her from registering to vote through the DMV. Ben is a naturalized citizen and a legal permanent resident in her family, but she said she worried that ICE could mistake her family for non-citizens. But Judge Hurd said that Ben did not have a, quote, concrete, unquote, argument, and her fears were, quote, subjective, unquote, because her family members have legal status. But the judge also criticized the county officials, quote, nearly before the ink could dry on the Green Light Act signature, Rensselaer had issued a press release that it could neither support nor enforce. What good it hoped to accomplish through that empty gesture is unclear, unquote, Hurd wrote. Read more about the story in the Times Union.
William J. Kimball is reporting for the Daily Freeman. The town of Rhinebeck officials are reviewing a proposal that would require property owners to acquire permits if they wish to host short-term rentals for less than 30 days. The proposed ordinance was discussed during a Rhinebeck Town Board meeting this week. Under the proposal, only hosted short-term rentals would be allowed. Zoning Review Group member Jerry Levy provided recommendations to establish a registry and require rental units to be inspected. The recommendations also include a requirement that a property manager be designated for short-term rental properties if the owner will be away. Levy said the town has between 90 and 135 short-term rental properties, which ranks second in Dutchess County. Town Supervisor Elizabeth Spencer said the recommendations would be reviewed with an emphasis on prohibiting properties from being purchased for the sole purpose of being used for short-term rentals. And you can read the full story in the Daily Freeman. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
National Weather Service in Albany has issued a winter storm warning from 7 a.m. on Sunday until 7 a.m. on Tuesday. And there is much snow expected during the period of time. Sunday, the snow should start around noon with a high near 26. 2 to 4 inches of snow is possible on Sunday. Another 3 to 7 inches is possible Sunday night with a low around 25 and more snow in the forecast. Monday, 6 to 10 inches are possible Monday with a high near 29. A little more snow Monday night ending around 4 a.m. with a low around 22. Tuesday should be partly sunny with a high of 30 and a low around 18. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM Acre, Catskill, Hudson. Radio for open ears.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
On Sunday, November 24th, the tale of the wooden puppet who dreams of becoming a real boy gets a twist by the pantaloons in Pinocchio All Strung Out at the Ghent Playhouse on Town Hall Road at 8 p.m. That's it for this week's WGXC Community Calendar. You can add your own event and hear it right here on the radio by visiting WGXC.org/calendar.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXE, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, 90.7 FM, a listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I'm a student at Hudson High School, and I'm also from Hudson.
I'm Lena, and I'm a student of M.C. Smith Intermediate School, I think it is. I'm also from Hudson.
We're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate,
bookish things. All that good stuff. So we're going to talk about some books today.
Yay!
But it's also Thanksgiving if you're tuning in on Thursday.
Yay! Yeah.
I'm sure everybody is listening to WGXE while they eat their Thanksgiving feast, because everyone's so thankful for WGXE. Mm-hmm. So what better way to celebrate being thankful than listening to your favorite community radio station?
Yay!
Yay! So we wanted to talk a little bit about what we're thankful for. So what are you thankful for, Amelia?
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm going to be having Thanksgiving at my house this year. So I don't have to travel. Yes.
That's a nice thing.
It's going to be a very small thing, just with me, my parents, and my grandfather.
And your cat.
And my cat. We got her...
Shout out to Patches.
We got her a... I think we have like turkey-flavored treats for her for that day.
Aw, that's sweet.
And my mom's going to make stuffing, and I love stuffing. After years of eating it over and over, I finally learned to love stuffing. I always wanted to like it, but I never liked it until a couple years ago. So I've accomplished my goal.
What are you thankful for, Lena?
I'm thankful for my friends and my family, and obviously my mother, because she gave birth to me.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Thanks, Mom.
Thank you. Shout out to Georgina Macias.
Here are people actually talking about their families and friends, and I'm sitting here like, man, Stefan.
We're all thankful for Thanksgiving feasts, and I'm sure we're all thankful for our families.
Yeah.
I know Amelia's very thankful for her fabulous family. Mm-hmm. I am also thankful for my family. They're great. I'm going to spend Thanksgiving with some of my aunts and uncles and cousins this year because my parents are away and my husband will be away.
Awesome.
But I will not be away. I'll be with other family.
I guess.
So it'll be fun to see them because I don't get to see them.
The mice will play.
Are you calling me a mouse?
No. Kinda.
That's okay. Oh, no. Mice are cute.
Mice are cute.
And wise.
Yeah, so that means you're wise and you're cute. So there. Mm. Compliment.
Thank you. I'm thankful for Lena calling me a mouse. But yeah, I'm thankful for my family and for my community. And I'm thankful for my awesome job at the Hudson Area Library. And speaking of libraries, I'm very thankful for the Mid-Hudson Library System, which gets me all the books I could ever dream of.
Wait, what is it exactly do again?
Like... The Mid-Hudson Library System is the system that we're a part of, our library. So we're one of 66 libraries in the Mid-Hudson Library System. And we're all separate entities, but we work together to help bring resources to people and make things possible for our communities. So if you ever want to borrow a book, if we don't have it at our library, we can say, hey, other library, can you send it our way so that Lena can read it? And they'll send it. Oh. And it comes in like a day or two usually.
Mm-hmm. Oh, like The Girl at Midnight?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The one that I ordered that is really good so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would be basically broke if it wasn't for the library and the library system, because I would spend all my money on books.
Okay.
Or I'd figure out how to find other joys in life, but then I would miss my books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you most thankful for in your Thanksgiving meal?
This is
one of those favorite Thanksgiving food questions. And honestly, if I was having it this year, it would be biscuits. Mm. But if biscuits
a certain
aren't
kind
there,
of biscuit or
buttermilk biscuits.
My mom makes some pumpkin rolls that are really good.
My favorite biscuits are the ones at Cracker Barrel. Because
maybe you can get some takeout.
My favorite biscuits are the ones in Red Lobster.
I've never been to Red Lobster, and I need to go there because they have those cheddar biscuits, and my friend talks about them all the time, and they're supposed to be really good.
Yeah.
I need to try them.
So what's your favorite Thanksgiving dish, Lena?
Everything at the table, but I'd have to say that the ham is the best because if you slice up a ham like a bacon strip, boom, you have bacon.
On my dad's family, if we were to have Thanksgiving at my Grandma Maria's apartment, we would have ham instead of turkey. That's the thing we do. And there is no table. We just stand around with paper plates and talk and get food and eat ham, and it's a good time.
My favorite is cranberry sauce, but I like my mom's cranberry sauce in particular, and I'm going to make some this year, even though not for Thanksgiving, but for afterwards, because somebody else is making the cranberry sauce, but I don't think I can go a year without having my mom's cranberry sauce recipe.
I'm also really fond of pumpkin pie.
I've actually never had pie before.
Any kind?
You've never had pie?
No, I don't think so.
No?
Well, there's none that I've actually really liked because I tried an apple pie before and oof, it did not taste work for you. Good.
I used to love apple pie and then one day it made me sick and I can't eat it ever since then. I just have flashbacks to that day.
I'm making a pie for Thanksgiving. It's chocolate peanut butter pie.
Nice.
And then it has pretzels dipped in chocolate on top.
Oh, bring us some.
And it's so good. And it's vegan. Yay.
Ooh.
Ooh.
It's really easy to make too, which is a bonus.
Cool.
So moving more into book land, is there a book or a book series that you're most thankful for?
Oh my gosh. I don't know if I can be thankful for this because the book I just finished made me cry.
Oh.
But I am thankful for Wings of Fire. And the Young Elites for just being there for me to love, even though I'm probably never going to get more of it. They're there for me to love.
Yeah.
But yeah, Wings of Fire and the upcoming books and comics.
Yeah. For Wings of Fire?
For Wings of Fire.
Oh, okay.
Cool. I hope they continue the comics into the next and third series, because if they continue into the third series, I have another really colorful, really bright and just colorful dragon book to look forward to, because the new species that they introduced are also really colorful.
Nice.
And I would love to see that in comic form as well.
Can you describe it?
Oh my gosh. So, wait, the whole series, the series as a whole, or the comics? Or the dragons?
Like, the new species.
Oh, the new species. So, in the first book, I think there were 7 species, and the one that was my favorite visually in the newest comic were called Rain Wings, which were chameleon-like and could change the color of their scales, so they could pretty much be any color they wanted. So, in one book where you had mostly browns, or another book where you had mostly blues, because that was the color that species came in, the Rain Wings could be, like, anything. There were blues and yellows and pinks. There's one really pink one that I love. And they could change it up, too. And also, it's set in a jungle with a lot of bright plants and animals. So it's just a very, very colorful thing. The new ones can't change their scales, but they're all based off of different butterflies. And can
nice.
Be just as colorful. Like, the main character is named Blue, and he is blue. His sister's name is Luna, and she looks like a Luna moth, one of those bright green ones. Their parents are named, like, Silver Spot, and I think another one. So they're the Silver Spot butterflies. Another character who I think is called Admiral, which is also a blue one, but they're very colorful and also very bright, and I love it so much. And it's just they're very pretty, and they also have like butterfly like wings too.
Cool.
So they look very cool. So it's just as colorful, but not as colorful as the Rain Wings, because the Rain Wings can be like any color. But yeah, if they were to continue with the comics that far into the future, I would really appreciate that, seeing that in, like, visuals.
Mm-hmm. That's very cool.
The setting of that one is also really unique, too, because they all live in hives.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
It's a very fantastical series.
Yeah.
It's fantastical.
I think it would be fun in graphic novels, too.
Yeah, it is.
So what about you, Lena? Do you have a book or series or author that you're most thankful for?
Okay, so That one author who meets the girl at midnight series, because it's getting really good, Raina Telgemeier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's great. She does some great graphic novels. Do you have a favorite of hers?
Wait, which one?
Raina Telgemeier.
I'd have to say the sisters one, because I remember I would get it, like, if I didn't know what to get, I'd always get Sisters, or if the book that I wanted wasn't there, and usually I'd just, like, go on the computers or something when I'm bored. I would just get that book because I just really like how interesting it is.
I don't know how to answer my own question. I think I'm really thankful for how diverse and eclectic and beautiful the picture book industry is right now. There's so many amazing picture books coming out, and I get a lot of joy from reading those. And then in terms of authors or books, it's hard to say. I think some of the classics that I always go back to, and maybe they're not my favorite, but I still appreciate them. I really appreciate the quirkiness of Shel Silverstein and how I feel like when I was a kid, he was very popular, and I feel like he's still very popular with kids. Like, he's sort of timeless in his weirdness. And I also have a audio recording of one of, I think, of A Light in the Attic, that book collection of poems.
Ooh.
And his reading of those poems is genius. It's so good. Everybody that likes Shel Silverstein should listen to that. I also love Arnold Lobel, who wrote Frog and Toad, that series.
Oh, I remember those books. I loved those books.
And I have a big place in my heart for Cat Wings, because they're cats with wings, and that's amazing.
Oh,
you've talked about Cat Wings before.
And that's one that I didn't read as a kid. I found that as an adult and was like, why did people hide this from me? Why didn't no one make me read this?
I actually recently ran into a friend of mine who first got me into Wings of Fire, and I'm sitting here like on the 13th book in the series, which is the latest one that came out, and she's looking at me and she's like, is that Wings of Fire? You're still reading that? And I just looked her dead in the eye. I'm like, yes.
Like, forever.
I am. Leave me alone. The latest book in that series was so good, and it was probably one of like the few I could probably summarize without spoiling everything up to that point. But it's so cute. It's so cute. I love them. I love the characters. And I love just love it.
When you like started talking about Cat Wings, that reminded me of a book that a girl was reading in class last year called Permaids. It's like cats as mermaids.
Wow. Oh, Permaids. That's so cute. I love cats.
It's funny, too, though, because I feel like most cats, not all cats, but the majority of cats do not like getting wet. So I'm just picturing these really miserable cats.
Aww. Like, on the cover, like, one was, like, with a tiara, and it's, like, so happy. Like, oh, adopt me, pet me, pet me. Come on, I want you to give me tummy rubs.
They're catfish. Oh! They're catfish. They're catfish. Oh, I'm gonna be repeating that to myself like at midnight tonight. Just like, catfish. Oh my god, they're catfish.
That's like, there was a book series called Scorpio Races by Maggie Stiefvater that I really loved. And in the book, there's horses from the sea, and I often refer to them as seahorses, but they're not seahorses like the little, you know, cute little seahorses. They're like wild beasts of horses.
Oh my god.
That come from the sea. But it seems funny calling them seahorses because they don't seem very, they don't seem that wild or scary or dangerous.
I thought seahorses just like stood there in like the ocean, and it's like, okay, what to do with my life now? I was just born.
Where do you find seahorses, like in the wild? That's a thought that's never occurred to me because I've only ever seen them in aquariums.
Yeah, me too.
And they're so tiny. I'm like, how do you exist outside of here?
Have you ever seen video of them having babies?
It's terrifying.
They're tiny and they just come like
it's
shooting
so
out.
It's so scary.
Yeah.
Seahorses are so small. How do they live? What do they do? This is going to bother me. This is going to bother me like the fact that I've never seen a living raccoon. That bothers me a lot. Well, I've never seen a raccoon alive.
Yeah, they're not as common here as some places.
I always see them like in shows or like in YouTube videos, like when Jane Animations was like I always wanted a pet raccoon, but someday I will get it. Just kidding. They tear up your couches and walls. And I'm like, and I just keep on watching it because the raccoon just looks so cute.
They are pretty cute.
So startled by the fact that I've never seen one alive except for like in videos and stuff. Like, are they real? Are raccoons real? I don't think they
They're
are.
Real. I've seen them in real life.
I think I actually texted a friend one day with no context and just asked them, hey, are raccoons real? I don't think they are. I'm starting to think they aren't.
It's a myth.
I've never seen a living raccoon.
Like Sasquatch.
Yeah.
Like,
watch me walk out of this building and like come face to face with a raccoon. I've seen a living skunk, unfortunately.
Wow. They're cute.
I don't even know what happened to that one. Like, I was just chilling and I'm like, oh my gosh, look at that cat. That's not a cat. I have to get past that thing.
Don't pet it.
What do I do? And I got past it, but like, it freaked me out for several reasons. For one thing, I don't think it was healthy because they're nocturnal and this thing was out in like at like noon. And I'm just like, what are you doing there? Buddy, please don't attack me.
Okay.
It was such like a punch in the gut to realize what I was looking at. I was just like, oh no, what do I do?
Oof. Well, I'm glad you survived.
Yes, I survived.
And they are real, the raccoons, as well as the skunks.
Yeah. I know skunks are real. I just don't know if raccoons are yet.
Sometimes I question myself, are seahorses real? Because like I've seen pictures of them. I've seen them like in fake aquarium wallpapers, but I'm like, are they even real?
Well, I've seen seahorses alive, like, in aquarium tanks.
Oh.
I'll tell you what, I have less of a problem believing that giant squids are real than raccoons, because, like, I've seen live, well, I haven't seen one, but I've, what am I saying? I've never seen a living, I don't think anyone has ever seen a living giant squid. They only ever wash up on the beach, and that's how they know they exist.
Yeah.
Because they live so deep in the ocean and they're so hard to observe that they're just chilling down there.
Yeah.
With pretty much
one
predator, which is like the giant sperm whale. That's the only thing that eats giant squids.
Oh, no.
That is terrifying.
I wonder how many of them there are.
I don't know. I mean, they're considered like least concern on the endangered species list, but half of me thinks that how would you know otherwise? You have no idea where they are. They're just chilling down there. Doing what they do with their giant eye, and it's so scary.
Oh, like, I question myself, are giant squids even a thing? Because, like, it could literally be just a jellyfish painting itself, like, somehow orange.
It's not even, just, like, the giant squid isn't even the biggest squid in the world. A colossal squid is the biggest squid in the world.
Yeah.
I don't like those either, because they're just giant squids, but bigger.
I like them, but I don't want to run into them in the ocean.
I wouldn't know.
But anyways.
Oh, no. I don't want this to end. I just don't want this to end because this is actually really interesting.
We've been talking about fish for such a long time.
Yeah.
What is this show about again?
Yeah. I read a book about fish.
Ooh. Remember Rainbow Fish? Yo, I loved that book when I was little.
I loved that book when I was little. I remember I would be like, oh, I'm a hardcore rainbow fish fan because, like, some people would be like, I love the seahorse. And I'm like, there's no seahorse in the story. And they'd just be like, I love this. And I'm like, dude, did you literally just, like, watch Baby Shark and be like, okay, I'm going to add a seahorse?
You know what? I was a hardcore The Hungry Caterpillar fan. When I was really little, my parents would read to me. I loved The Hungry Caterpillar. And, like, I wanted to eat all the food he ate because I was like, man, that looks good. I want some plums.
I was always like, oh my god.
The Hungry Caterpillar is literally the reason why I sought out and tried a plum for the first time when I was 13, I think. And I was like, man, look at this. This is the stuff that caterpillar ate. It must be good. And it was. It was delicious.
Oof. That just like makes me think of what I did. Whenever I watch something too much, like Inuyasha or some anime or something, they would be like, come on, Naruto, or come on, Yasha. And they never did that to me when I was that age, but, like, I would just watch it all the time.
Oh, speaking of anime and stuff, I got into, like, a really intense discussion with a girl in the manga section of Barnes & Noble, and it was awesome. I don't know why, but it was great. I didn't even have to, like, initiate it. She just walked up and started talking to me about the different stuff on the shelves, and I'm like, cool.
That's nice.
cool.
It was just a customer. It wasn't.
It was a customer. It was just some customer. And I was like, awesome. Awesome. And then she's like, you should read Wolf Children or Your Lie in April sometime. And I'm like, you know what? I would, but I don't feel like crying today. Oof. Because I know that those two things are sad. And I've already cried over The Book Thief. So I'm going to have to spend quite a bit before I cry over anything else.
Oh, no.
The Book Thief was so sad. And now I finally know where the quote, I'm haunted by humans, comes from. I knew that that was a quote from something, but I never knew it was from that book. Mm-hmm. So when that final quote hit me in the end, I was like, wait a minute. Then we spent, like, all of English just gushing over this book. And the funny thing is, during our class, we had this assignment which was, like, character recipes, which is this thing where you had to, like, put character traits as ingredients. And me and my friend went above and beyond and made a Book Thief cafe. Whoa. With a food themed after each thing. And Death, who's the narrator of The Book Thief, is Death. Oh. In it, he says something like, my favorite color is dark chocolate. So we made, my friend made chocolate pudding and brought it in. And we have this running joke that Tom Hiddleston would be great at playing Death in this book. And this, all of these inside jokes just culminated into this instant where we're all sitting here eating chocolate pudding with a picture of Tom Hiddleston on the Promethean board. And this girl walks in and looks at us and goes, Miss Neer, is this a class? Miss Neer's like, yes, as we sit eating chocolate pudding and looking at a giant picture of Tom Hiddleston on the board. And we're just like, yes, this is a class. Get out. This is our time. There's six of us and Miss Neer.
Get your own pudding.
There's just six of us and our teacher, and we're very territorial. In fact, next year they're planning on evening out the classes, and the six of us are just going to sit right in the front. We're going to assert our dominance. Like, we were here first.
Oh, no.
We are her favorite.
I'm glad you liked the book, even though it made you sad.
It did make me cry. I loved everyone in that book. Mm-hmm. How could I love everyone in that book? We've decided that Marcus Zizek must have sold his soul to something to write that book. Because it is so good. Book. It is so good.
You can look forward to reading that someday, Lena. Oof. And crying your eyes out.
Yeah, but if she doesn't want to cry soon, then maybe you should save Your Lie in April for last.
I know how it ends.
Oh, okay.
And I'd still probably cry.
I remember I'd cry, but now I'm like, why did I cry over this?
I mean, I saw the ending coming. I was like, yeah.
What's the series called?
Your Lie in April. It's a manga and an anime. Yes.
Yeah.
In April?
Yeah. Yes. It is about this piano player who's lost his, like, will to perform, and he meets this violin player, and she's like, you should. And then they do, and they have this cute, like, romance, and then it ends, and then I cry.
Yeah.
And that is how it goes.
Yeah.
Even though I saw the ending coming, I still cried.
I didn't see it. I'm like, wait, what? How does this happen? I don't get it. And I kind of get it, but still don't get it.
Yeah.
Do you both read much manga?
I have every book of Black Butler, which is the shirt I'm wearing right now, up until the last few. I can't find the one between 20 and 22. I've seen the beginning of 22, and a theory like I thought about was correct, that a lot of people thought was correct, is correct. But I can't read 22 yet and see my theory come to fruition, because 21 is nowhere in the world, apparently. I can't find it.
Wow.
But, that was my first, like, real deal, like, Japanese comic manga experience was Black Butler. And the anime of Black Butler. And then I got these other things. I started getting into Tokyo Ghoul, which I'm not as into now because the quality dropped. I got into this thing called Magical Girl Apocalypse, which is not appropriate for anyone in the world. And I don't know why I read it, because it was frightening and awful. Oh. And I think I, like, pawned off all those books to a friend because I was like, I don't want these in my house anymore. Please take them.
Good to have friends willing to take that on.
I have this other one that's supposed to be really good. And then I have the Junji Ito comics, which are horror and are really, really good horror because his illustrations are just so unnerving. Mm. And also there's just the shock of turning a page, like compared to like in a movie you can rewind, you can look. But when you turn a page and the way he draws something, you really have to look at it for a bit before you realize what you're looking at. And what you're looking at is almost always horrifying. So I have two of those, and I've only read one so far. I have Doubt, which was a pretty good, almost Saw-like horror manga as well. And I think I had this thing called Happy Marriage for a little while, because when you're reading Tokyo Ghoul and Magical Girl Apocalypse and Junji Ito, sometimes you just need a stupid romance manga with no logic to to just reinvigorate yourself, to just read something that doesn't require any thinking or any, like, deep existential crises. And you gotta just read about this lady who's decided to marry her boss, and it's cute. And even though it wouldn't be cute in real life, it's cute in this manga, and I don't want to think about it. So let me read my cheesy Beauty and the Beast-esque romance, and let me live. I don't have those anymore either. Where did they go? I only read two of them, and I don't know where they went. But yes, that's what I read. I know I have more somewhere that I just haven't bothered to read. I think I had one by this author who is well known for, like, writing really nice, like, LGBT romances, which are much more common in Japanese mm-hmm. animation than it and, like, in shows than it is in, like, American stuff. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember what that one was called or where it went either. I need to go home and sort through these things.
Well, we're actually out of time for today.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. So you
I just rambled for a very long time. You asked me about manga, and I was like, here's my in.
But I'm saying that's good timing, because now you can go home and sort through all your books if you want.
Yeah.
But we hope everyone out there listening has a great Thanksgiving. Yay. Or had it if you're listening after the fact. We're thankful for you, our listeners.
Yeah.
And we're thankful for all the books that we hope you get to read this coming week. We hope they are wonderful, whether they make you cry or make you smile or somewhere in between or horrify you. So many options.
Yeah. Make you, you brought me back to a place that I never wanted to remember with some of these things.
No. You're welcome. But have a great week. Happy reading.
Bye.
Bye.
WGXE welcomes audio responses from listeners. Anyone can call and leave a message with WGXE, and we'll play it on the air. Call 518-291-WGXE and leave up to a 3-minute message for airplay. Hear something you disagree with? Want to speak out on an issue? Plug your band's show? Let your neighbors know something important? Call 518-291-9492 and leave a 3-minute message anytime about any issue. That number again is 518-291-WGXC. 518-291-9492.
A new report from the United Nations warns that countries must take drastic action to rapidly curtail greenhouse gas emissions. The emissions gap report underscores that countries must stop the development of planned or projected fossil fuel projects. We're joined now by Alex Beecham, who is the Northeast Regional Organizer of Food and Water Action. So Alex, what does Food and Water think of this new UN report, and what are some of the key points that it's making?
Yeah, I mean, thanks so much for having me. The report is alarming, to say the least, right? So this is a new UN report saying that right now global temperatures are on track to rise as much as 3.2 degrees Celsius by the end of the century. You know, scientists think really we need to limit warming to 1.5 degrees to avoid some of the most catastrophic effects of climate change. So that's obviously alarming. I think from our perspective, the most urgent task for all of us, for policymakers, political leaders, and really the global climate movement, for all of us, this report ought to be a wake-up call that we need to demand solutions that cut off the supply of fossil fuels at the source. You know, we don't have time anymore to waste on carbon trading or some other neoliberal market scheme to try to lower emissions. We've got to cut them off at the source, and this report, I think, really underscores that.
So did the report itself, take a position against, the various carbon trading and carbon tax proposals?
I mean, the report is just saying the path we're on, right, and how alarming it is. But to us, it really highlights that what we're doing right now, whether it's the Paris Accord, whatever other minor progress we've made on climate change is just not anywhere close to fast enough. And so to us, I think it really underscores the need for a much, much stronger approach.
Right. Now, I know, of course, Food and Water Watch has been, active in many of the fights in New York State around various fossil fuel infrastructure. I know you have an event coming up in the governor's office, I believe, around December 11th or so. But, also you've been quite active, particularly on the Williams pipeline. What's been going on? How is the governor really reacting to this idea that you have to, immediately begin to halt, fossil fuels? Obviously, just recently he took a pretty strong stance against National Grid, who was claiming that they couldn't hook up any more natural gas customers because he wasn't getting the pipelines they wanted, and he threatened to take away their permission to operate in New York State, and they agreed, oh, I guess we found some new sources, and we'll pay you $36 million to stop beating up on us. But where is the governor on, let's haul fossil fuels, period?
Yeah, it's a mixed bag, right? I mean, in some ways, I think the governor has taken some really strong actions on stopping the supply side of fossil fuels, right? Going all the way back to the ban on fracking 5 years ago. This administration's also stopped several pipelines. We won a huge fight on the Cayuga power plant, which would have been a refired, old coal plant that they wanted to transition to a gas burning plant. That was killed this summer. So, there's some real success stories. I would say in every instance where the governor did the right thing, there was a huge movement of people pushing him to do that, right? That really he's following the grassroots lead. And I think like most politicians, Governor Cuomo responds mostly to political power. And so if you build enough of it, you can win some of these fights. Now, that's only part of it, right? At the same time, he's approved the Cricket Valley power plant, which is under construction now in Dover. He obviously approved the CPV plant in Orange County, which is now operational. And he did all of that when it was abundantly clear that we shouldn't be building any new fossil fuel plants at all. So he's by no means all the way there. But I think the note of hope there is that, the climate movement is bigger and louder than it's ever been. And if we all can keep building it that way, I think you can really begin to make it politically impossible for anything new to be built. And look, we all know that's only the very basic first step, right? After that, you've got to start shutting down all the existing fossil fuel projects across the state. And that, if anything, is just a harder fight, but one that we can ultimately win, and frankly, one that we have to win.
Well, I know in the Capital District, a lot of groups, including Food and Water Watch, had fought against the governor's proposal to put new gas frack turbines in on Sheridan Avenue to not only heat the Empire State Plaza, but to provide electricity, microgrids. And eventually, after several years of organizing, he agreed to, okay, we're not going to put new gas turbines in here. We'll use solar for our renewable energy. But he did not agree to stop the 6 gas boilers that are still at the Sheridan Avenue facility, which is providing heat, steam, basically, for the state capitol, and that's been going on, for a year or so. But one project, we've heard a lot recently on WOOC, Hudson Mohawk Radio Network, about Cricket Valley, since a couple of us got arrested down there. But Dam Scammer has been another project a little bit south of the Capital District. And I know you guys have been passing some resolutions about that. You want to give us a quick overview of Dam Scammer and where that's at and what next steps are?
Yeah, so it's similar to Cayuga in a way. So this is originally an old coal plant that then transitioned to natural gas as a peaker plant. So what that means is on peak demand days, it fires up, right? So the hottest days of the year when the electric grid has the highest demand, all these peaker plants fire up. So there's now a proposal to transition that into a baseload facility that would just run 24/7, basically, right? So you're talking about way more emissions, way more power. And so this is something we've been opposing from the start. This is in Newburgh, you know, right on the Hudson River. And it's early in the process, right? It's very unclear what the administration will do. But to me, the grassroots energy around this has been really phenomenal. There's, I think, 11 towns in the Hudson Valley that have passed resolutions, including Newburgh itself, all of them urging the governor to stop this thing. And they're more in the works, right? I think when it's all said and done, we'll have 20, maybe 30 resolutions against this thing. So that's really, really good news. You know, and this is sort of going through this wonky Article 10 process that I won't bore listeners with. But basically, it's very early on, right? And that's important because when you can build it, when you can build a movement early in the permitting process, we've seen that we've been able to get this governor to stop it. So I'm very hopeful on that one, but it's going to take a lot of work. And certainly, at least in the Hudson Valley, there has been an enormous amount of energy and activism around it, which I think is, you know, is our best hope.
Now, one of the things that came out earlier this week is a new report from some scientists who sort of raised the alarm that, in fact, you know, increasing evidence shows that the idea that we're going to pass a tipping point where climate runs away and, you know, civilization as we know it come to an end may, in fact, be much closer than we anticipated. Not at, you know, a 4 to 5 degree centigrade hike in temperatures, but actually even in a 1 to 1.5 degree centigrade, which is sort of where we're at the present time. How did you react to that news?
Well, it's just more confirmation that we need to do more much faster, right? So there are all these tipping points out there, right, from the Arctic ice sheets to the permafrost to drought in the Amazon rainforest. And what's truly alarming is that, you know, we know a lot about these things, but there's a pretty high level of uncertainty of when exactly they happen and how much warming it will take for them to happen. And so I think, you know, a lot of us who work in this stuff all the time, I think it's easy to sort of just put blinders on and go on and do the work. But when you really take a step back and look at it, you realize, you know, the news on this, right, on climate change, we know more and more about it from a scientific level than we've ever known before. And what's increasingly clear is the old models, if they were wrong, were wrong in that they were too conservative. And so I think, if anything, it really underscores that we need to be calling for sort of maximalist demands, right? We've got to be pushing much, much, much faster than we are now. You know, New York is barely lowering its emissions at all. Globally, our emissions are still going up, and almost daily you have a story that's recommending truly drastic year-by-year emissions cuts, and we're just nowhere near to it. So, you know, somehow we've got to get our tipping point of our own and have the climate movement be so strong that we really just have some sort of paradigm shift of how we're dealing with this, because to the extent there's been progress on climate change, it's just not fast enough.
Alex Beecham, we're out of time. Food and Water Watch, your website?
Yep, it's foodandwaterwatch.org.
And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network. Alex, I want to actually continue for a few minutes beyond our playtime. I know that the Food and Water Watch is part of this Green New Deal movement in New York State. But one of the things which I believe you actually just wrote an op-ed about was the idea that public power taking over the utility companies might be one of the solutions for climate change. Why have you decided to push that issue?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've begun to see, I think, the limits of what private utilities can do. And to me, the fight over the Williams pipeline and National Grid's extraordinarily extreme reaction to it kind of underscored the need for a whole new way of dealing with this, right? And it's particularly important where the natural gas utility where the same utility doesn't own gas and electric, right? Because as you try to switch away from fossil fuels, every single thing you could do that's helpful for the climate means the natural gas utility loses money, right? So you're either electrifying heat and then the utility is losing that customer entirely. You're engaging in energy efficiency measures. That means less gas. That's less money. you're switching to something like geothermal, again, that's less money for the gas company. And so you start to realize that this private profit incentive is in many ways, at least on the gas side, directly at odds with anything meaningful that we would do on climate. And I think it's only going to get worse. You know, as the gas guys continue to see the writing on the wall, I think you're going to have more and more really hardball tactics from those utilities, like we saw in the Williams pipeline fight, where they just tried to bully the governor into approving a pipeline by making up a gas supply shortage. Thankfully, the governor basically called their bluff, right? But I think it really does show the limits of the current model. And we think if you put control of the utilities in the public's hands, and importantly, have real democratic processes that allow the public to have a meaningful role in weighing in, right? That how you structure this really matters. You could have a bad public utility as well.
LIPA, right, Long Island Power Authority. They're not
exactly
survived.
Like LIPA, yeah. Yeah, so you've got to do it right. But we think we can, and we're excited to fight for that this session. There's going to be a series of bills in this next legislative session in 2020. So we're excited about it.
Well, let's finish up with, why don't you give us an overview of the Green New Deal, which I understand also includes trying to shut down, stop new fossil fuel infrastructure. But, what are the other components besides public power and the fossil fuel infrastructure of the Green New Deal? And how do you expect to, elevate the campaign in the coming, months?
Yeah, so, a bunch of groups came together to try to create a field-focused coalition that would fight for really transformative change on climate issues. And so we kind of coalesced around these four demands. One is no new fossil fuel infrastructure. The second demand is 100% renewable energy. The third is taxing the rich to pay for all of this, to pay for a just transition, but to pay for, a Green New Deal for New York more broadly. And then fourth is public power, which we just talked about, putting the control of the utilities back in the public's hands. So we're really excited about this. The whole idea is that we want to organize and push around big demands that are hard to achieve, but would really kind of meet the scale of the crisis we all find ourselves in. And crucially, demands that we think we can organize around, right? This is very much kind of an outsider-driven campaign versus, starting with the lobbyists and what you think you can get passed and then trying to organize around it. We're really trying to do it the other way around, right? Starting with what people in the field actually care about. And I think we could build a huge movement around this. So we're obviously excited about it.
Well, I know one of the groups, it's you, New York Community Should Change, New York City DSA, and also the Sunrise Movement. And I believe on December 6th, the Sunrise Movement nationally, but certainly I know here in the Capital District, are doing a number of events to promote the Green New Deal, including, I believe, some type of sit-in at the governor's office. So is December 6th an event that the New York campaign is going to be promoting?
Yeah, we will. There's so much going on that day. It's also another climate strike day. So in the city, I think a lot of folks' energy will go to that. It's another huge day where the youth are leading and having a big climate strike. But yeah, we will. And it's also a busy week. So on December 4th, just 2 days before that, the governor's having his annual birthday fundraiser, and we'll have a huge crowd of activists outside.
You
that
just love going to his demand. Birthday events.
We do love the birthday events. They're fun. We'll have birthday hats. So that'll be fun on December 4th in the city. And it's part of a longstanding campaign, right, to be outside as many of the governor's events as we possibly can. Just yesterday we were outside a speech he was giving as he was handing out turkeys in Brooklyn.
Does he come out and take selfies with you?
He hasn't taken any selfies. He smiled and waved yesterday, so that's something.
Okay. Well, thank you, Alex Beecham, Northeast Regional Organizer, Director for Food and Water Watch. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Shersha Mizan from Hudson. You are listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC always needs computer donations. If you have an old one you don't need, and it is either a Macintosh 2011 or newer 2.0 GHz or faster CPU, dual core or more, or Windows 2012 or newer 2.4 GHz or faster CPU, dual core or more, email info@wgxc.org for more information.